Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Well, I don't know, 12-year-old Gregory wrinkled his brow. If someone comes late to a practice, then he probably shouldn't be allowed to play in the next game, if those are the rules. But wait, cautioned his classmate Samantha. Suppose he was in a car accident or something. That wasn't his fault. On the other hand, injected Ben, how about if he's the driver and the accident is his fault? Maybe the team should have a list of okay excuses, replied Carly. Then everyone would know. Suppose you were the team captain, offered their teacher, Mrs. McMillan. How would you construct the rules to be fair? If we do a good job, Samantha chimed in again, maybe our philosophy club can suggest new rules for the athletic teams. From a parent's perspective, what can we learn from extracurricular philosophical discussion groups for our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests have developed and implemented a whole new provocative extracurricular program for middle school children. Kathleen Gregory was a 5th and 6th grade English and social studies teacher and is now the talented and gifted program coordinator at Kenmore Middle School in Landover, Maryland. Working with some very bright kids over the years, she developed what she named the Philosophy Club, an opportunity to discuss and debate an array of ethical and philosophical issues over lunch in her classroom. It turned out to be quite popular and seemed to meet students' needs for additional intellectual stimulation. She's the mother of 3 grown children. Jan Plain is a lecturer in computer science at the University of Maryland. She has 2 children, a son in middle school, where Jan works with the Philosophy Club and with Kathy Gregory, and a daughter who's a senior in high school. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Kathy and Jan.
Hello, and thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Please tell us about the Philosophy Club and how it actually works.
Well, in middle school, we have found that the best time to gather kids for Philosophy Club, logistically, is lunchtime. And given that's how I started over lunch in my classroom, we continued with that. We struggled to find a place that would work and finally settled on our school foyer. So you walk in, we have our sign hanging, and there we are in a circle. And Jan can talk about how we named it, the Lyceum.
It's the school where Aristotle taught in Greece. We call it the Lyceum because one of our main focus points of it is to emphasize the Socratic method and bringing out the ideas of what they already know. So we make a circle of chairs and make announcements during the lunch periods. We hold it usually 3 different lunch periods, sort of repeating the same material 3 times.
Oh, so you have three groups. Different groups.
Yes.
Do some kids come sometimes and not every time, or how
yes.
does it work that way?
Yeah. Even my son comes sometimes.
Although I think we have found, as we've kind of settled in here at middle school,
regular.
That we have a pretty dedicated group of kids yeah. who come on a regular basis, giving up, I might add, their real only opportunity to socialize during the day, which I think says something about those kids and about the interest in something like Philosophy Club. Because they step outside of the cafeteria, bring their lunch, and we're out in the foyer, and we spend the full half an hour just waxing philosophical.
What was the genesis of the club?
The genesis was really I had taught in a talented and gifted program in elementary school. All the kids in my class were tag-identified students, 5th and 6th graders, and it just seemed that we never had quite enough time, given all that we had to do, for just flat-out debate and discussion. They could never get quite enough. Characteristics of gifted kids include things like heightened sensitivity, a real curiosity and a desire to know, a real sense of justice and fairness. So they just loved the idea of being able to get together and just spend a full half an hour, which is what we had, just debating and talking about deep issues.
What kinds of kids join? I'm sure that there are lots of different kinds of talented and gifted kids in your school.
There are. And what I found is that my first audience was really the kids who had known me and had come to my philosophy club in elementary school. So that was beautiful because that was a place to start. They kind of spread the word and brought their friends in, their new friends in middle school. And I would go to the microphone and try to talk briefly about what philosophy club involved. Many kids would come up and ask me to explain it more. Some kids tried it out and thought, isn't for me. But the word just kind of spread. The lunches are TAG kids, comprehensive students, a real mix. It's open to anyone who wants to come.
What changes have you seen in the participants over the course of the school year?
The main thing I see is several of them were quiet and not verbally expressing their ideas, have really blossomed and now have a framework of how they can support their own ideas. Because being able to argue their ideas and support it with reason and critically think about what the others are saying is a skill that they learn by doing. And so seeing other people doing it, Morse children are getting the knack of it.
What are some of the kinds of topics that they address in the Lyceum?
We actually make an effort to really cover across the areas of philosophy. We started with the concept of truth, and they thought the word truth was something they would know what it was. And then when they got to defining it, they realized maybe it's not that easy to define. And went into areas of metaphysics. Ethics is one of the major ones that especially a certain group likes to discuss. But then aesthetics and lots of them. We make a handout. So we make a decision of what the topic is going to be. But that topic usually starts out with a thought exercise of what would you do, sort of like the story you started out with. What would you do in this situation? Sometimes they vote and argue their point to convince others to follow. Sometimes they criticize, you know, critically think about what the other person's thinking and say why, you know, that won't work. So we go across all different areas.
Is this every day or once a week?
We strive for once a week. That's our goal. Mm-hmm. There are weeks when things are just a little too chaotic or logistically impossible, either because of my schedule or things going on in school or Jan's busy schedule. So we aim for once a week, and then we try to coordinate. And if I can digress and just add, bringing Jan in was a wonderful thing because I taught 5th and 6th grade English and social studies, but I did not have a background in philosophy. I called it the Philosophy Club, but it was really originally just a debate and discussion club. Bringing Jan in, Jan has a background in philosophy, which she remembers well, even though she doesn't really teach philosophy. And so between Jan's expertise and my resources, books and sources of ideas, we sort of pull together what we do.
Since I teach at the university, I had a very different concept of what you could do in a half hour with middle schoolers, since I have an hour with college students. Yeah, so that's a learning. But with working with Mrs. Gregory, she guides the elementary ed part, and I get the philosophy part in there. And between the two of us, it makes a good match.
And what was interesting, too, if I might add, is that the kids who I had were used to doing it sort of my way. We would have an idea, a topic. Do animals have rights? Is it ever okay to lie? Is violence ever justified? Should boxing be banned? There's a whole litany of things. But bringing Jan in, we're able to really combine some actual philosophy and give them a brief education about philosophers and their different schools of thought, while also giving the kids what they especially crave, which is the opportunity to just discuss and debate such interesting topics. So it's been a nice combination.
Our sheets that we make will often have a statement from one philosopher and a statement from another philosopher that are contradictory. And then the students can read just a small statement and then figure out where they fall in this argument and say why this one is good and this one is bad, or really a mix is what you need. You know, bring two or three ideas in and let them argue it.
Going back to changes in participants, a couple additional things. I think really we are enhancing their abilities, certainly as students, but also I think as human beings. Jan mentioned they're learning to be respectful of other opinions, to really listen. But they're also improving their verbal skills, their ability to communicate, which from a teacher's perspective, kids definitely need to have that to succeed in high school, in college, in life. They learn to formulate their opinions in a really clear, concise manner, and then, as Jan said, to defend them. I think they learn to recognize and think through also ethical problems and issues that abound in society, and I think in their lives they will face many of them. I also think, finally, that we're sort of building a sense of community with this group, which is a very nice additional feature, and I think also something that hopefully they will experience in life.
As a college teacher, building on that, one of the classes I teach is discrete structures, which is doing mathematical proofs. And so I see their ability to argue a ethical or metaphysical thing helping them in that mathematical and technological type fields.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on philosophy for middle schoolers.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Kathy Gregory and Jan Plain about philosophy for middle schoolers.
Can you tell what long-term benefits there might be for individual participants?
Well, I think certainly foremost is their ability to think critically, think logically, learn how to reason through things, whether it's things that you're writing or things that you're reading. In fact, any good English curriculum includes information about reasoning. We use a curriculum at Kenmore for English out of the College of William and Mary, for instance, and defining the elements of reasoning and recognizing the art of reasoning is a substantial part of that. I think they learn to question things. I think something like this really ignites a passion, too, for curiosity and the desire to know and to want to know more, which I think is really huge. Being able to recognize and accept that there are other points of view, not just yours, and you need to take that into consideration. Being able to make sound ethical judgments, and just in general, improving literacy, their metacognitive skills, their ability to think about how they think, seeing that disagreeing is not necessarily bad.
My main motivation, I think, is we started with looking at the Greek philosophers, and one quote from Aristotle was, "It's a mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it." So that ability to be able to really hear what another person is saying and understand why they are arguing that side and be able to fully understand other perspectives and critically analyze their own.
Based on these experiences, what changes in middle school education would you advocate?
I have come to see that I would absolutely advocate for the addition, if nothing else, of philosophy and debate into the curriculum. And that can either be done in a class in and of itself, but it could also be infused through every subject area, through math, through science, through history, through English, art. For instance, it would be hard to study history or government or social studies without considering things like the need for government or civil disobedience and why it's used, examining conflict, considering what's good for the greater good. Science is just replete with opportunities to discuss ethics. And in fact, that's going to be a huge field in the future. The ability to clone and to change someone's DNA just lends itself beautifully to the idea to philosophize and to debate about such things. Even math. One of our topics was, you know, do numbers really exist?
Do they exist when you're not thinking about them?
Which we were afraid might fall completely flat, but the kids really, it was just totally different from anything I'd ever done, but the kids sort of got into it. So you can even bring philosophy and debate into math. You can talk about deductive reasoning. In art, what is beauty? Why do we even have art? And English, which is my passion. For instance, in eighth grade English, they read the book Lord of the Flies. Well, if you're going to read Lord of the Flies, then being able to talk about the idea of the state of human nature, are humans inherently evil or are humans inherently good? And middle school students, tag or otherwise, are more than capable of talking about things like this. So it just creates much more meaning in literature and in English classes.
One of the really good debates we had was on that issue of state of nature, because some of the students have a feeling that the state of nature is really good, that people, if there was no government, we'd basically all live happily ever after, you know, in the whole world. But while others, if there was no government, you know, especially certain leader type members, said, you know, how they would take over, basically, and then other people would support them. But then they also saw that if that person was a dictator, then somebody else would, you know, create his own group and overthrow that dictator and set up a new dictatorship. So they had this whole concept, many different angles of it, of what would happen if there was no government and how people would behave.
the idea of going back to English, of using moral and ethical dilemmas, whether from popular movies or books or newspaper current events, is a great way to teach kids to do persuasive writing, good persuasive writing. And not only that, it's interesting. It grabs kids. So it can be much more motivating for kids than what they might read in their textbook, for instance.
It sounds like with these kinds of thinking and persuasive skills being honed, that you've got kids who come out of this more self-confident than when they went
definitely.
In.
I definitely think we have seen that.
Not only self-confident, but also self-aware. They know why they believe certain things if they question them. And that's an important thing to go through the rest of their lives.
Do you have a way, other than you, Jan, since you're both a mom and a leader in this program, do you have a way of knowing whether the kids take some of this home, whether it brings discussion into the home that might not have been there?
Actually, it wasn't in the home, but Future Cities, the competition, a lot of the kids were sitting around. They brought up philosophy issues, discussing them there while they were waiting for their project to be judged. And that was totally out of the school context.
Now, Future City sounds like an interesting concept. What is that?
It's an engineering competition.
Is it national?
The nationals are taking place in D.C.
So it's a national engineering
engineering competition.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
I also have a competitive debate team, and many of the same kids do both, debate and philosophy. They go hand in hand, and the same kind of kids are motivated by both. And I know that during our debate meetings, kids are also making connections to things we've talked about at Philosophy Club, but they are also regularly bringing in things that they were discussing on the way to debate team with their parents or over the dinner table. So I definitely believe that things like Philosophy Club and debate club or team, whatever, are things that parents who know their kids are participating generally want to know what they're talking about, and then they have their points of view. So it's really a beautiful thing. I think in most cases it does promote family discussion.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on philosophy for middle schoolers.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Kathleen Gregory and Jan Plain about philosophy for middle schoolers.
What would you advise parents to sort of jumpstart something like this, especially if their kids are not in a philosophy club or a debate club? How could they jumpstart these kinds of discussions at home?
I think a lot of times with kids, the discussion has to be a little more directed than a general question like, how was your day at school? They see something on the news or whatever that's controversial, and allow them to debate their side of it. You can show them how to critically analyze what they're saying, but the real thing to avoid is to make sure you don't just say, that's wrong, this is right, when it's something that can be debated. And if they learn to debate and really understand what they feel and how to express what they feel, it makes for a better communication.
And we'll sort of use debate and just generally discuss sort of synonymously in this case. But I also think recognizing that children of even very young ages have points of view and have things to say. So you really need to engage them in these kind of conversations to find out what they're thinking and then to expose them to things. Again, as an English teacher and a lover of children's literature, I'll go right back to books. I think also finding and promoting good literature, good children's books, from picture books to novels that have topics that are just ripe for discussion is a good idea. And there are many ways online, many resources to access good literature. For instance, just connecting literature with philosophy, one website that I found out about is www.teachingchildrenphilosophy.org. And there is a professor, a Dr. Thomas Wartenberg, who really believes in teaching philosophy through children's books. So he lists a large number of books and then further talks about the topics and the issues that can be discussed based on that book and poses questions for discussion. So I think if parents feel like that's sort of a hard thing to do, then accessing a site like his that can direct you to good children's books. And I think the discussion will naturally flow, but if not, he certainly poses thoughtful questions that could be used by both educators and parents.
It's interesting you were talking about even young children have opinions. And I wonder how young you could take this.
One nice thing that has come about that I never anticipated from this whole philosophy club exposure has been the fact that I've been contacted by a number of organizations and professors and just people who generally are sort of on this cutting edge of believing that philosophy education should be a part of our overall education. I think even if you think about it, what is something that preschoolers learn to say almost immediately? That's not fair. So the whole idea of, well, what is fair? And you don't have to go extremely deep with kids, but instead of just overlooking that, taking that as an opportunity to sort of begin discussions at an early age. But there are many topics that I think preschoolers kind of just naturally think about, and I think they want to know about the world. So I think there are plenty of opportunities to engage in discussions and not count them out as being too young. And I think, by contrast, it goes right on up through college and into adulthood. The desire to know and to be curious and to think about your thinking and think about issues in the world.
One of the things that you guys mentioned, which I think is significant for gifted kids particularly, is the idea of community that's been built. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? That seems like that's an important benefit for gifted kids who are very often on the margins.
Having an intellectual peer group, which is definitely what we find in Philosophy Club. And it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's at the same intellectual level, but everybody seems to benefit from their common interest in wanting to know about these things. And whether you're someone who spends more time listening, at least at first, than talking, you are still benefiting, I think, from being in that intellectual community. Kids who are not afraid, or kids who see that you can socialize and intellectualize at the same time, and that's a beautiful thing.
The non-TAG kids that are coming to Philosophy Club, too, though I notice a even faster learning curve. They see the other students, you know, critically analyzing another person's arguments. And those students, you really see how fast they can develop that skill after they've seen it a little. I think some of them haven't seen it as much as they need to.
You very often hear in education you need to give students a chance to reach just a little higher, and putting them in a group like
Absolutely.
That where they can.
And we haven't mentioned that, but I think just adding philosophy and debate and such things just adds the rigor that I think oftentimes school curriculum really needs, especially in these days of spending so much time preparing for such things as state tests. Let's not forget that there are other ways that you can use philosophy, for instance, as a way to increase literacy and to increase reasoning. And in general, I think they go hand in hand. I think then we'll find that kids are going to be more successful on said state tests and more successful in life.
They're more motivated to do things like reading. For example, if you read the book along with them, but then you discuss it as they're reading it, it makes it so much more real if you're discussing it as a peer rather than waiting for them to finish and then write a book report or something.
I think other ways that parents can support things like this is to get involved with their school. I know that we're a busy society and that everybody has many things they need to do. But for instance, Jan taking the time to, and she works and raises children, but taking the time to come in and do this has been hugely helpful to me and in promoting something that is really more than just an opportunity to sit and discuss, but an actual real philosophy club. So that's been huge. I think joining organizations, whatever they might be, local organizations that promote things like modifying the curriculum to allow for things like this, or to allow time, or to support extracurricular activities. We have a lot of extracurricular activities. We're fortunate at our school. We decided not to make this a before or after school thing because we wanted to be as inclusive as possible. And we know that there are those kids who there is no transportation to and from these activities. So we know that there are those kids who otherwise would not be able to attend. They couldn't get there, couldn't get a ride home. So we made a conscious decision to find a way to do this during the school day.
Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap up this show right now. But before we do, what resources would you suggest for listeners who would like to learn more about this kind of program?
Well, as a result of doing Philosophy Club, I have found a number of resources. There is the Squire Family Foundation, which can be found at squirefoundation.org, which is an organization that promotes ethics education, largely for secondary school students, middle and high school. But they happen to have right now, for instance, a blog up that they call The Philosophical Student. So anybody can access that, and there will always be some thoughtful topics and brief essays, and then kids have an opportunity to just blog about that. There is a Kids Philosophy Slam based here in Washington, D.C., actually. It's like an annual contest. They pose a philosophical question, like, what's the meaning of life? And then kids have an opportunity to express themselves, depending on their age, in either words or poetry or song or art. And anybody can participate in that.
How do you find out about that?
If you just Google Kids Philosophy or Philosophy Slam to go and check that out. I think even if you just do a search for philosophy or teaching kids philosophy, there is the teachingchildrenphilosophy.org website I alluded to earlier. There's the Institute for the Advancement of Philosophy for Children, based in Montclair State University, which includes all kinds of links to a number of other philosophy-based type organizations. So there is no lack of resources on the internet for pursuing philosophy.
Well, you have certainly given us no lack of resources for pursuing this topic. So, Kathy Gregory and Jan Plain, thank you both so much for being with us and helping us to learn about the importance of teaching philosophy to kids.
Thank you again for having us. We appreciate your interest.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child: Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 428 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from you, our listeners. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.